Thank you all very much. Thanks a lot. Thank you very much. Please. Thank you. Thank you all very, very much, and thank you very much as well for coming here today. There's been a tad of speculation about my future, so I wanted to meet with you today to explain what I'm going to be doing and why. I wanted to have this talk with you here at the State Department because over the last 3.5 years, together we have run through a whirlwind of history. We've set the pace and marked a course through an era of what can only, I think, be called revolutionary change. And we've made, I hope, a little bit of history in that process, all of which I want to sincerely thank you for. Thinking back, I recall the demanding problems that we faced in Nicaragua right off the bat in January 1989. Some people at that time, you'll recall, were talking about containment. Others said we should just look away and try to avoid the controversy. The Congress was terribly divided, the nation was divided, but working with you, we fashioned a new strategy based on democracy. Many at the time said it couldn't be done, but together we did it. And together we built on that success to stop the killing in El Salvador as well and bring the parties together peacefully. Now this group, better than anybody else, knows well that United States diplomacy has required coordinated professional execution in many corners of the globe. Perhaps the most important feature of this worldwide strategy was our engagement of the Soviet Union, what we referred to at the time as a search for points of mutual advantage. Working across a range of issues, we probed the Soviets' new thinking. Then we tried to infuse that thinking with a fundamentally new content on regional conflicts, human rights and democracy, the standoff in Europe, conventional arms cuts, nuclear cuts, proliferation, economics, and of course transnational topics as well. That's how the Cold War was brought to a quiet and a peaceful and a democratic end. People said the Soviets would never permit free elections behind the Iron Curtain in Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and elsewhere. People said the Red Army wouldn't go peacefully, but it did. When the Berlin Wall came down, the doubters told us we couldn't unify Germany peacefully and democratically while retaining the 40-year ties to the West and to NATO. But together, we did. 4 years ago, the children of America still had to go to bed at night with worries about a nuclear Armageddon. Movies about the day after and articles about ground zero etched into our minds the precariousness of our security. Our experts discussed how to build new and ever more dangerous missiles, missiles that would maintain a deeply disturbing balance of terror. But with a lot of help from some of the finest people that I've ever had the privilege of working with, we ended that nightmare. As the Soviet Union dissolved, we worked to make sure all nuclear weapons were accounted for and all were secured. And now our experts are hard at work disabling and destroying those weapons on a major scale. We also brokered understandings among the new states to ensure the progress of arms reduction and to check proliferation. But even as we were ending the Cold War, a new danger rolled across the sands of Kuwait, signaling the advance of a madman with weapons of mass destruction. He stood on the brink of overwhelming our allies, monopolizing much of the world's energy supplies and turning the Mideast into a nuclear powder keg. It took the labors of almost every office in this department and many, many posts around the world to build an unprecedented coalition of nations through the United Nations to turn back and destroy this threat. We were told at the time, if you remember, that such a coalition couldn't be built and wouldn't hold. But it was, and it did. You deserve to be very proud of that record. In the aftermath of the Gulf War, skeptics said the United States might be able to win the war, but that success would mean nothing if we lost the peace. So we set out to see how we could build on that victory. And I'm very proud to say that I don't think we've done badly. For the first time ever, All of Israel's neighbors are sitting down to discuss peace with her. On top of that, 13 Arab states are meeting with Israel to discuss arms control, water, the environment, and other issues that are essential for creating a totally new outlook in the Middle East. Later this month, a new round, indeed a new phase of negotiations, will move us further along the road to peace among the biblical lands that have been in a state of war for far too long. We've changed the agenda from preventing war and even nuclear devastation to creating an unprecedented hope for peace in the Middle East. Perhaps most important, we've seen the triumph of the values, the principles and values that America has always stood for. Our predecessors labored, often against heavy odds, to give the peoples of Eastern Europe, Latin America, Asia, and Africa a chance for freedom and democracy. And now they have a chance, and they need our help. We've laid the legal, organizational, and material foundations of what must be a sustained effort. We also launch new efforts that I hope will support the labors of our successors. The North Atlantic Cooperation Council, an organization for Asia-Pacific economic cooperation, the North American Free Trade Agreement, the Enterprise for the Americas Initiative, the new organs of the CSCE, a transatlantic declaration between the United States and the European Community, a global partnership with Japan, a new relationship with Russia, and a vast expansion and augmentation of regimes to stop, control, roll back the proliferation of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, as well as the missiles that could deliver them. We have promoted new ideas that I hope will have resilience. For example, reliance on elections, not only to establish legitimacy, but also as a device for resolving conflicts. We've pursued this formula in Central America, in Namibia, in Angola, and in Cambodia. We've been establishing a framework, institutionally and intellectually, for American leadership of collective engagement to preserve and to promote our political and economic values as well as our security. And I know that any success that we may have achieved is due in considerable part to the hard work, to the spirit, to the professionalism, and to the commitment of all of you. There's also, I think, been a lesson in these accounts, and it probably isn't too subtle. We faced a lot of doubters, you and I, over these past 3.5 years. But I think we've demonstrated that American willpower can beat the conventional wisdom if we use our strengths as a nation wisely. Each time they said we couldn't succeed, we did. This is a lesson that I think we need to apply at home as well. Of course, I have some regrets. One is that I know we still have a lot of work to do together. It's still a dangerous world, as we see daily, of course, in Bosnia. It's also, though, a world of great opportunity. There are still great risks if we fail to make the right choices, and great risks if we fail to engage. I firmly believe that the United States of America is without question the only country in the world that can exercise the necessary leadership in the decade ahead. And it's this faith in America, faith in our people, that has led me to make one of the most difficult decisions of my life. I know that there's disquiet in a number of countries. I've felt it while traveling. It's strangely similar to a description written by a Frenchman at the beginning of another new era in this century, when he said, "The storm has died away, and still we are uneasy, as if the storm were about to break." I see that people here at home are anxious, and they're nervous about the future. At this point in history, I firmly believe that it's vital for this nation of ours to demonstrate its unique ability to transform anxiety and even anger into regeneration. Only the United States has the people and the resources and the economic strength and especially the principles, values, and ideals to pick up that challenge. I have great faith in the common sense of the American people. We need to confront and describe the problems in plain terms And then we need to advance our solutions. As you might expect, the President and I have given long and serious thought to what I might be able to do to help our country at this moment. I have been extremely fortunate to have served three presidents of the United States and to have served them in differing areas, economic and domestic policy, and now, for the last 3.5 years, foreign policy. The President knows that all policies have to be brought together effectively if we are going to prosper as a people and succeed as a nation. America must have appropriate new approaches for the changes at home, just as we have launched new policies to manage the changes abroad. We must concentrate on the interrelationship between domestic and foreign policy, and between economic and security policy. At the same time, we must execute our agenda more effectively with a new Congress. In sum, I remain absolutely certain that we need a safe and strong America at home to be safe and strong abroad. So I have decided to resign as Secretary of State effective August the 23rd to work with the President to help develop a second-term agenda that builds on what has been achieved and that fully integrates our domestic, economic, and foreign policies. The President will be asking for the support of the American people to give him a mandate for this agenda. I'm fully committed to this decision because I believe this year the people of the United States will be making fundamental choices, and they'll be making fundamental choices at a pivotal time in America's journey. When you peel away the rhetoric, there are very, very different ideas in conflict out there. We should build on the fundamentals of lower tax rates, limits on government spending, greater competition, less economic regulation, and more open trade that can unleash tremendous private initiative and growth. But I think that in the 90s, government can add to this growth program by building opportunity and hope for individuals, families, and communities. I think that there is a conservative agenda for helping people and for responding to their needs. We want to empower them to make their own choices, to break away from dependency. We want to give them economic security, a stake in society. Initiative should be unleashed. Success should be rewarded. Excellence, obviously, should be our goal. Contrasting philosophies matter when it comes down to what each party really wants to do. We might discuss similar topics, but there are sharp differences in approaches. The President wants to offer the voters an integrated program to strengthen America and to give our people economic security, building from the ground up and not from the top down. We need schools where our kids will learn how to keep learning all of their lives, because the 21st century workplace will be constantly changing and people need to be prepared to adapt to it. We need a range of job training and placement services for young people, factory workers, white-collar employees, and defense industry workers. We need to support civilian R&D in leading-edge sectors and a research extension network to make our discoveries available to entrepreneurial business. We need social services for health and welfare that help the truly needy, but also enable others to break the cycle of poverty, to get back on their feet, to get back to work, and to take responsibility for their own choices. We need to restore hope in the inner cities by clearing away the handicap of crime, building a core of property owners, creating business incentives, and focusing our programs on work and on discipline. We need to give people a real prospect of enjoying the rewards and fruits of their labors. That means safe neighborhoods so that families can concentrate on building something for themselves and not just protecting their homes, their property, and even their children. That also means low taxes, it means low inflation, and it means, of course, affordable and competitive health care. And we need to streamline and overhaul the business of government so public servants will help the private sector be an engine of opportunity, competition, and achievement. I think that these actions will support one another And they'll support one another to commit America to excellence, to competitiveness, to adaptability, to make it a society at work as well as the best place to live. So if we move on all these fronts together, and if we ask people to pitch in and not just leave everything to the government, there's no doubt in my mind that America will be unquestionably safe and strong at home, as well as safe and strong and in a leadership role abroad in the year 2000. We should complement, of course, our work at home with continuing initiatives abroad. The key to America's growth, expansion, and innovation has always been America's openness to trade, to investment, to ideas, and to people. Therefore, as we enact the North American Free Trade Agreement, we should also wrap up the global trade negotiations. Then we can build an expanding network of free trade agreements with the market democracies of Latin America that are turning to us, with Eastern European democracies that want a special relationship with the United States, and with Pacific nations that want their future secure with America's. We can use the attraction of America, which after all is the largest fully integrated market in the world, to assure strong economic ties across the Atlantic and the Pacific. America will be an export superpower and a military superpower. Now, some of these ideas that I've mentioned may not be particularly revolutionary. Most of them are common sense, and we've been advocating a number of them over the past years. What is new, I think, is the commitment to press them together as a package to make America safe and strong, both at home and abroad. That's part of the mandate that the president will seek. That's the kind of choice that he will be presenting to the American people. President Bush and I, as practically all of you, I'm sure, know, have been close friends for 35 years. And I know what he can accomplish when he directs his resolve toward a purpose. I think we saw it in the Gulf. He's a trusted leader. And my friends, I think we will see it again as President Bush targets America. I know there'll be skeptics. Some will ask why President Bush spent so much time on foreign policy during his first term. And here's my reply. Over the past 4 years, more of our fellow human beings have gained their freedom than any other time in human history. And we have permanently turned back the hands of the nuclear doomsday clock. So the president saw a chance to take on the two central problems of our age, the struggle for freedom and the threat of nuclear war, and he seized it. No apologies for that. It's time now to turn to new challenges, to the future, at home and abroad. And that's exactly what President Bush intends to do. It's not easy for me to leave you and this department. We all understand, I think, that we do still have a lot of work to do. But all of you who deal all the time with the challenges the United States faces around the globe, with the problems that require American leadership, you know better than anyone that our strength ultimately flows from our own country and flows from the American people. And that strength has got to be renewed every 4 years under our system with a mandate from the people. I also take a great deal of comfort from the knowledge that I am leaving the department in very steady hands. I'm proud, very, very proud of the cadre of assistant secretaries, deputy assistant secretaries, ambassadors, and everyone else who will continue to bear some very, very heavy burdens. Whether foreign service or civil service, from the newest secretary and the most junior desk officer to my friend and loyal colleague, Larry Eagleburger, you are a fine, fine, fine core of professionals. It has really been an honor to serve with you. I thank you and I salute you.